You thought you'd gotten rid of us, didn't you? But you were wrong, old bean, because we're back with a vengeance.
From studios in Hollywood, California, rural southern Indiana, and the hinterlands of North Dakota, this is the Live, Laugh, Golf Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Desert Duffer, OTB Lefty, and Jay Score.
Welcome back to the big show. Duffer here, high above Hollywood Boulevard. My co-host Jay Score is in Washington State somewhere, and I have OTP Lefty on site still at Live Chicago. Fellas, how are you?
I'm doing really great, Duff. I'm doing really great, Duff. I have been playing golf all weekend out in Seattle, Tacoma, and a little bit tired. Tomorrow's a travel day as I head back home and get to reality.
I've walked 714 miles, Duff, but I feel great. I had a shower.
How was all the good experience? Tell us all about it. I guess we should say Live Chicago is in the books. Cam Smith got his first victory on the Live Tour. He beat Dustin Johnson and Peter Uihlein by 3 strokes.
That's true. Uihlein picked up the tiebreaker for a second place podium finish. And then the four aces on the back of Dustin Johnson's last hole near chip in for eagle won by 1 shot over Smash GC, primarily under the power of Uihlein today and Chase Koepka, who finished 5 under on his third round.
We'll get into the details of the scoring, I suppose, at later on in this podcast, but can you tell me, OTP, who came in third? It looked to me like the High Flyers tied for third with Punch GC, but I also heard, I thought on the broadcast, that the High Flyers did get that podium spot. Was there a tiebreaker?
There was no team podium for first, second, and third. What I'm saying is they weren't part of the presentation. And at the end, there was some talk about that, but on the website, the High Flyers are listed as third place finishers, 17 under par.
So. Yeah, so you're in the same spot as I am. We don't know. I didn't mean the literal podium. I meant the figurative first, second, third, the guys that get paid podium. How was it? Was it a good time? How was the food? Did you meet Taylor Gooch? Tell us the story.
Well, first off, the overall score is about 10.2 out of 10. You don't want to compare it to anything. That would be kind of too easy to do. I talked to many people who were out each day. I attended the tournament all 3 days that there was competition going on. And the fans were overwhelmingly positive and excited about a new way to do things. The most striking difference is the music. The music is pumping everywhere.
So it was loud. Yeah, like I said, it wasn't too loud in Boston. Maybe they remedied that situation.
Yes. And with that, the crowd does not feel such a need to be quiet. People aren't walking on their tiptoes. There's no one walking on eggshells.
Do we think that's a good thing, or is that something that frustrated you? Do you want a little bit more respect? But were you the old guy?
No, not very often. Not very often. I think later in the day, some folks on some more lightly attended holes were a little bit more forward than I would have liked. I like to be a little bit respectful of the competitors and not try to participate in the competition, let's say, and other folks do not share those apprehensions.
If we've learned anything about golf fans in this country, it's that they love to be on the broadcast. They love to hear their voice saying mashed potato or Baba Booey. A lot of Baba Booey's out there?
No, not a lot of Baba Booey's, but I'm going to tell you, based on some of the things that I heard, that you would beg for mashed potatoes. You would ask for a second, third, and fourth helping of mashed potatoes. All of the promotion going on, it's reminiscent of like an outside tailgate before an NFL game when they're like trying to corral people in the stadium and come over to this fan experience and come do this and throw the football and get your picture taken with a 19-foot tall, you know, whatever. There's a fan village. There's food trucks. There are, you know, announcements going on all over the place. There are games being played. There's a special kids zone. There's an arcade. There are places with air conditioning.
Did you get
that?
You can get painted
out of the heat. I did not get my face painted. I think I had the opportunity. It did turn red over the 3 days in the natural course of business. I really loved it.
Your co-host encouraged you to get a mullet for charity. My understanding is you did not do that for us.
I did not. This is the year of flow, but that's not the kind of flow that I'm into. I just had this touched up, Duff, and like, I really...
Yeah, it's you got a little Dutch boy thing going on right now, and it feels like the mullet really could be a good thing for Southern Indiana. I wish you'd give it a shot.
That's really tough. I can turn this into a Pat Riley, very professional look in just seconds. Anyway, the point that I was trying to make about all of the things that I mentioned was that it is a spectacle. There's a lot of things going on. And for folks who are unfamiliar with golf and unfamiliar with golf tournaments, and I did meet quite a few of those folks, they really had fun. They were really enjoying the energy level. And I honestly, vicariously, I did too. Of course,
can we get a beer price check?
Cold domestic, 16 ounce, $9. Mm-hmm. IPAs for 10. A couple of beers I'd never had before. But let me
not bad, but not great.
Let me give you this. Only on Saturday afternoon was there ever a substantial wait for beer. Friday, I was never more than third in line. I had a couple. And then today, only had a couple. And again, just walk right up to the bar and get what you need.
So as I said, there were bars spread out throughout the course. You were always not too far away from a cold refreshment. But in the Fan Village itself, there was the one place that had the cheap beer. Maybe you missed that. Maybe that was there and you just didn't catch that one.
I never found it. I was working my way around trying to learn about the golf course, trying to see it all.
Of course.
I'd heard and read so much in the days before the tournament about Rich Harvest Farms and all the peculiarity that I wanted to go out and try to see what it was for myself. I found a golf course that is startlingly difficult to the eye. Of course, did not play, but it looks like a bear. There are many, many, many force carries. There's a lot of times when the driver is taken out of your hands forcibly by either, you know, fairway running into a lake where there's water, fairway goes downhill to the lake. A lot of that sort of stuff. Greens, odd shapes, kidney beans, boomerangs, bananas, that kind
of
stuff.
A lot of oversized, wildly shaped greens with bunkers in weird places. I mean, it could be interesting for the recreational player. I suppose it seemed a little odd seeing these guys play it.
I'm telling you, it looked difficult and it played hard.
Seems like there were a lot of greens where you'd have to, in a serious tournament, think about chipping from certain positions on the green.
Absolutely. I saw it a couple of times. I don't know if it made the broadcast, but those kinds of things did happen. And a couple of places that, you know, someone who plays the way I play and lives how I have to live saw some of those tight lies and just thought, oh, mercy. Like, not from here.
Yeah, you put it through the
but rest. I feel like they handled it amazingly well. Greens marked by a lack of depth in certain places, where the 14th hole in particular, we caught quite a bit of action there yesterday, and there's a back right, like kind of little ear that sticks out there where the pin was. The green there couldn't be more than 10 or 12 yards deep. And, you know, short shot equals small target in that design way of thinking.
So,
and we saw some amazing stuff there, including Sergio hitting one in there when I'm interested in the outcome, let's say, with one of my friends. Sand wedge shot hits the flag, goes backwards into the bunker. Heartbreak for both of us.
On Friday, DJ shot a 63, a 9-under 63. It looked like maybe this is an easy course. Maybe he's going to run away with it. Maybe he's going to tear this place up. Then it seemed like it got harder. Obviously, the winning score was just 13 under. I noticed at the very beginning of the day yesterday that the fairway seemed quite firm and fast. As I said, Bryson started on hole 18, hit a 6-iron that I saw run out like 80 yards. Was it playing fast all around the course? I mean, was it understandable to you why the scores got higher on the weekend, or was it just the wind?
Yes, it is understandable. And let's talk about 18 for a minute, because 18 is bananas. That hole is nuts. Your best play off the tee is not driver, even though some folks insisted on it. I saw hybrids. I saw three woods. I saw utility woods, and they would catch the slope and it would roll down this thing, and the fairway got narrower as it went down the hill and then expanded out. Balls would trail off to the left and go into this high grass. It's like a foot tall. Just what a weird shot. And then there's a tree in the middle of the fairway. So you can hit it down there and hit a perfect drive and have 190 yards on the right side of the fairway and you're just blocked. You're just I don't know, hit a sandwich sideways. Green, again, also almost no depth to that green. If you watched any of the play there, shots that landed by the pin were bouncing back into Club 54 there against the tarp and providing some opportunities for the rules committee to show off their skills. I just thought it was a wild hole. And that's something that for us, we would play that completely differently. You know, that would be 3-iron, 7-iron sand wedge or something like that.
Yeah, I'd probably hit driver, but it was funny to see Bryson hit 6-iron, 9-iron. What about the other holes, Dora? Was it 12 or 14 that was for the long hitters, you could hit it over the trees and try to drive the green? We saw Troy do that in her little segment.
That was number 12, and Kokrak hit it over the green today.
Yeah, a bunch of the just guys. Incredible. I mean, you like that
absolutely
hole?
Incredible.
Did you have a favorite hole out there?
Favorite. Man, there's a few that are in the running. 16, par 3, just an amazing look. Loved that. Number 2, par 5, around the lake, because it's like the last hole before the course kind of becomes more parkland. It looks like a Pete Dye style par 5, where it looks a lot shorter than it really is. And the wind conditions there caused the players that I saw play it, including my man Pooj, who birdied on Friday. Pooj. Great moment.
Have we settled on Pooj? Is that
Pooj?
Do we have
the pronunciation that we got was P-O-O-Z-H.
Yes.
So I was close.
Yeah. So I did some internet research as soon as we ended our last pod. There were a lot of different ways to say it, depending on, it sounds like your friend Pooj is from Catalonia. Maybe the Catalan pronunciation is Pooj-ish. The wonderful Jane McNeil, I heard in Mr. Pooj's press conference, said Pooj, as you say, with a Z-H, kind of a zhuzh sound. So I guess that's how we'll do it going forward. I can't make any promises. I'm probably going to call him Puig. All due respect, of course.
Yeah. Anyhow, nothing but respect for him and his family. Anyhow, my very first moment, like participating with a LIV player, involved his hooked tee shot on the second hole, because as soon as play began, I went and went to follow him. He hooked one over in the fescue and in a place where I don't know what I would have done. And he had no problem at all. It's amazing.
He didn't hit you or anything. You didn't get a sign.
No. But I was obviously, you know, full of fear and love for my boy and hoping that I could find the ball. And of course I was able to do that for him. And then he immediately, like I said, punched out of a tough situation. Then he wedged it close and made a four there. Paired with Hudson Swafford and the Chikara, Oklahoma State player. Again, all those guys, really impressive. Swafford swings so easy and hits it so hard.
So before we get too deep into the tournament action, I want to talk about some more players and your impressions of them. And I guess we should run down the scores a little bit. But what about the media treatment? What about the food? How was the food as compared? You know, I had some complaints and I was promised that things were going to be better for you this time around in Chicago. How was the buffet? Breakfast? Breakfast, lunch, dinner?
I picked up dinner twice as well as some snacks. Such as it was, I had such an enormous breakfast Saturday out in the village of Aurora there, the town of Aurora, that I didn't need really breakfast or lunch. We had Italian on Friday, short rib rigatoni.
Oh.
Along with one of my favorite things, a chopped salad. We like things in small pieces, folks, and that's great. I skipped the breadstick because obviously I've had plenty in my time. Very pleased. Cheesecake balls, cheesecake on a stick, cheesecake pops, whatever they call that. Those are nice. That's decadent. It's weird to, you know, to get free water. You know, I don't know. It's nice. Everyone in Cops.
What a wonderful world. Can you imagine?
Free water.
Let's stay humble. Let's stay humble, folks. No, you laugh, but let's stay humble because there are folks out there who are paying $4 a bottle, and we have the privilege of getting it for free so that we can provide such amazing entertainment like this. I'm grateful.
There are also people incarcerated all over the world who get free water. So it's
you can't always be this way. I'm just thankful for the thought. Good grief. Yeah. Anyway, the food was excellent. And as a person in my position, I actually get to eat a lot of buffet food. And this was far above what we get most of the time. No disrespect to any caterers who we may hire. Yeah, absolutely not. We had chicken shawarma. I'm not going to filibuster on shawarma and falafel, but it was nice, and I appreciate it. Food talk is over.
Great. What's next?
So a lot of talk has been made that it's not competitive anymore. How much talk have you read that, like, oh, they've got their checks and they're done. They're not competitive anymore. I saw 10 people on the range Friday night, 10 people on the range Saturday night. There's players, teachers everywhere. We saw Gankus with Wolf. We saw Sean Foley today all over the place. Mickelson was out hitting balls last night with his teacher. And Matt Jones has been working very, very hard on his game. We saw him working on what looked like some kind of impact move from bunkers, from like with short wedges, hitting flighted shots in the wind, all kinds of that stuff. I learned a lot about true professional golf behavior. And one of them I wanted to share with you guys is pay no heed to what direction you hit the ball or what you do with it. It's your thing. You're practicing. At one point, a guy's working on something in a fairway bunker with his coach, and he's just turns and just starts launching balls into the gutch, off the range, off the property. Never gave it a second thought. We're working on our golf game. Bye-bye, Mr. Titleist.
What do you think about the clothing? I mean, not to be so basic as to say how many guys were wearing shorts, but there were some things that stood out to me. Obviously, Pat Perez was in shorts for the first time. That jumped out. Yes.
Duff, is there potential dissent going on in the Four Aces? Is there a potential rift occurring?
I don't think there's...
Pat Perez dissenting and wearing shorts. Are you concerned that your Four Aces might be weakening?
Not at all. If there's one thing that I'm sure of, it's that Pat Perez is not causing any problem on the Four Aces.
Okay.
I am totally certain that he sought pre-approval before wearing his shorts today.
What do you think that process was like? Did he have to meet DJ in person? Was it just a text message?
There was a team meeting, and I'm paraphrasing from the press conference, but he basically said, I've been playing like an amateur. I needed to shake something up, so I thought I'd just dress like one.
Look like an amateur? I love it.
Yeah, and this apparently was after Boston, and I guess DJ said, Pat, you just do you, but please play better.
Yeah.
Well, he kind of did. He went second round 71, third round 69 after firing a dicey 76 in round one. So Pat Perez may be actually trending with the shift to shorts.
Yeah, what's great about this team format is, you know, the first two rounds, only two scores go. So at any one time, they all say Pat Perez can get hot. Right? Pat just needs to have one good day in the first two. But what makes Four Aces so dominant is not because of the first two rounds, even though a lot of times they seem to be taking a lead into the final round. It's that once you get to that final round, you've got three scores counting. And that's where it's you're facing the bad boys. DJ, Pat Reed, and Taylor Gooch. No other team has three guys that they can put up. We can talk about the team stuff later. I think, you know, it's been all fun and games and jokes and everyone laughs and says, ha, yeah, those guys are doing really well. They're a dynasty. But at a certain point, these other guys got to be looking over there and saying, okay, it's all funny and everything, but they're each collecting a 750 grand check every week.
Yeah.
And we need to work on this and make it a little more fair. I have to think Kevin Na is not happy about not picking up any money in the team competition. I guess he did last time.
Yeah, wouldn't be, but you're also in control of your own destiny, right? It's a little bit of a meritocracy, but there's just not a lot of merit coming out of those ends.
Well, that's the question. Is it a meritocracy? I mean, what is – so I guess we can talk about it now. Right now, we know how these teams were determined. It was totally stacked. DJ said, I want Taylor Gooch on my team. He got him on his team. In what sort of parity are we going to have going forward? There should be like a salary cap or something. There's got to be something to prevent DJ from just saying, hey, you know, whomever you guys want to be on my team. And there's got to be something. We had this illusion of a draft in London that we know was fixed, right? Obviously, some of them were clearly stacked. But I'm just curious to see if there's any kind of process for the team selection next year, right? With the guys who are getting relegated and promoted, they're just getting thrown on a team. If you're the captain of the team, like, why did I just get David Pooge?
I'd like to see them...
I'd like to see, you know, basically just you got the captains more or less figured out after this year. And then I would assume there'll be some sort of redraft heading into next season as a fresh start, but maybe not. I don't know.
See, I don't think there will, right? Because we're clearly trying to establish some sort of national identity for some of these teams, like the South African team and the Australian mm-hmm. team. You want to keep those guys together. But at the same time, nobody wants to sit around and watch these guys. I mean, Pat Perez has won $3 million in the last 4 weeks on this team. The team competition, I think the winning team gets.
It is. Anyway, they're clearly happy with one another. At the end, Phil and Cam Tringali and all this stuff, there is some esprit de corps there. There's some bonds that have been built. I don't think you could fake all of that. You would think
so. I will love you guys to death, too, if we start making $3 million.
Yes. Yes. The celebration was really fun to see. And I got down there to see all of the championship pictures and all the trophy stuff and the caddies having fun with one another and getting their pictures taken with Greg. And I mean, how could you not be happy after you win $750,000? Please don't get me wrong. I get it. It's a good thing. But also, like, they're standing around waiting for the press conference to be asked heaven knows what questions they were going to get asked, you know. Check the transcripts for details, but just having good times, good stuff.
What about the rest of the guys' clothes? Cam was wearing some crazy shirts. I really like what Sergio was wearing this week. Yesterday, he had this like really nice pale pink outfit on, looked crisp. Who else impressed you on the clothing
front? Yeah, I never get to do this, Duff. I agree with you. That was the fit of the week, in my opinion. Fantastic. Not just a pure, the lightest pink possible. Yeah. Like you could just barely detectable. Well, one thing I want
to spill coffee on that. Like I wouldn't have gotten to the golf course.
One thing I want to address here is that there is a sock problem. Just team to team, there's not any standard there. There's not any rhyme or reason to it. My nomination for second best fit of the week is Scott Vincent, who came out in the tall black socks, black sleeves, big hat.
Everything I saw from him.
On Friday. He's the man. And he is the man. And we'll talk about him later. But just I liked what he put together. You know, DJ's a classic guy. You know, he's got a – you know, he's an Adonis. You know, nobody can argue that.
You know
that.
What you're going to get from DJ. But Scott Vincent, I didn't see what he wore today, but I guess yesterday he came out in the same thing he wore on Friday, except in brown. I think that's kind of his thing. Like then there's Pat Perez. So Pat Perez, he came out in the shorts today. Pat Perez looks like two out of every three guys that you get matched with in Vegas, like at Angel Park or Paiute. Like, you know that he's like, I don't know, he runs a cannabis company, or maybe he's got like some sort of automobile modification thing. He does like headers and exhaust systems or something, but yeah. He's with his buddies. They get lit. You know, they've got the OEM head covers on all their clubs, which are shiny and new.
Pat, man, we're almost the same age. He's out there lip syncing to Bust a Move while he's hitting balls in the morning. I mean, this is a good guy. I don't care what anybody says. He's a good hang.
So many F-bombs from him today. That's the other thing. If Liv, and they will, I suppose, there was some talk about that this week about Greg Norman working on the broadcast deal. But if and when they get a broadcast deal, a lot of language out there. The mics are picking up a lot of stuff from some of these guys.
We can deal with a 7-second delay. We can't have the 30-minute delay that we're accustomed to getting on a television show.
Did you see Joaquin Niemann? Joaquin Niemann, I don't know whether it was yesterday or Friday, he had the light tan joggers and a white polo that was untucked. I mean, he looks really good, but he looks like a junior high kid from Sherman Oaks. Like, he's with his buddies at the mini golf place, the pitch and putt.
That was bullet number two. That was the worst. I mean, you got to be kidding me.
You did not
with
like
the,
that.
With the untucked shirt. Joggers are just not good for golf. Like, what happens when with those cinched legs is it just messes up the fit, right? It just messes up the cut. And then it's almost like you can't have a belt. You almost have to have his were elastic. It's just not good. Not a fan.
I think you and the Country Club adjacent guys had an entirely different viewpoint on the Joaquin Niemann fit.
I imagine we did. Anyway, something else. I don't want to let everyone get out ahead of me on this, but there's a lot of talk in the golf community, and there's a lot of fun games we play with one another about where'd your belt come from, right? We dress up in our little golf outfit.
Yeah, I don't know if everyone's in that. That might be just
Well, it's pretty niche. No, it's not just me, but a lot of people have them, and a lot of big time golf courses have them, and they're very cool. And I know all three of us have them. But anyway, everybody's going crocodile. That's the thing. Monochromatic crocodile deal. Gray pants, gray crocodile belt. Black pants, black crocodile belt. Very sharp. Like it very much. Until they come out with the belt buckles, I'm good. I can't abide.
Which, what do you mean? What belt buckles you can't abide?
Like the belt buckles that go over, the large square things with the diamond encrusted whatever. A couple guys have those. Hey, you've got millions of dollars. No problem, but you come at me wearing one of those things. We're only playing 70% handicaps.
What about just the cowboy belt buckle? I mean, you know how I feel about those. I got a really special one after I beat one of our friends in a big match one time. I like to wear that. Is that okay? Will that work with the crocodile, you think?
This is questionable stuff. I don't want to go too far down this road, but what do you say?
I think it would, Duff. I think it would. I think you absolutely, crocodile deserves some ornate jewelry to go with it. And why not start with the buckle?
Yeah, the dual buckle. We're going to check out we're going to get the PETA people after us because you're a proponent of crocodiles.
Would you prefer can we do alligator instead? I don't know what it's made out of. Some kind of reptilian scale.
What I'm saying is I don't think they like either of that. I don't think they want you killing alligators and using their skin for your belt, for your golf accessories.
Well, I won't be committing the murder. I'm certain that the materials were obtained in a humane and eco-friendly fashion.
Always remember, folks, the views and opinions expressed on this program are of the speaker alone. They do not necessarily reflect those of
Maybe it's just synthetic pressed pattern, right? It might not be actual animal skin, you know?
I mean, possible that it's just pressed bonded leather? Who could say?
All right, let's talk a little golf. Peter Uihlein, I think, was a huge story. Cam Smith, obviously, one of the best golfers in the world. DJ, very disappointing weekend. He shot 73-70, tie for second. But Peter Uihlein, I think Peter Uihlein and Chase Koepka get a lot of crap from the golf community, especially the golf Twitterati, right? Because they're both relatives of powerful people, and we hate nepotism. So Peter Uihlein obviously is the son of the chief executive of Acushnet, which is the parent company of Titleist and FootJoy and others. But Peter Uihlein earned, but golf is a meritocracy, right? Everything he earned on the PGA Tour, he wasn't given. I think he gets a lot of crap. Here he is, T2nd at LIV Chicago, making a boatload. And he brought his team onto the podium, along with Chase Koepka, who, just like Peter Uihlein, he lives in the shadow of his famous multiple major winning older brother. They said, you're only there because of Brooks. Maybe so, but Brooks isn't on this leaderboard. Brooks wasn't the guy who brought them to the podium. Chase Koepka, got to give this guy credit.
It felt like Peter Uihlein was fate that he was going to go low today. I was out at Sahali Country Club. I was in the clubhouse wandering around, admiring Vijay Singh's accomplishments there at the PGA Championship. And there was another board honoring the Sahali Players Championship winners of the past, and Peter Uihlein was a 2010 winner. So pure coincidence, but also just sort of interesting to see that he ended up going low today.
Yeah, maybe
truly
you,
fate.
Maybe you were responsible. So that, I mean, it, that's...
Who could say? But him and Chase Koepka both made Smash GC fly up the... with their both low rounds today, helped Smash GC fly up the pylon, finishing only one behind four aces. So
yeah, second place.
But I'm with you, Duff. I think those folks... I think Chase and Peter Uihlein and... others do get a lot of crap, but I have to hedge though. I mean, I can't ignore the Acushnet relationship, the connectivity there.
Illuminati, and right. Right. I didn't expect you really to come full with me in support of this
hedge.
One.
Oh, I have to hedge.
I have to jump back to the close real quick. Cameron Tringali. I mentioned last week at Boston, I saw him on the range in shorts. Loved what he was wearing, was looking forward to his shorts outfits in the coming days. He did not wear shorts on Friday. I don't know that I saw him yesterday, but today he was rocking a sweet shorts outfit. Again, slim fit, short inseam, colored socks with the stripes. Camp Tringale, he's a style icon on the LIV Tour. He's the guy.
I want to give a dishonorable mention to Wade Ormsby and rocking the highlighter yellow chartreuse shirt. I think any clothing manufacturer that makes a shirt that color probably should just not make shirts at all. Why would you want to go out looking like a somebody who's working construction with just a bright yellow?
Yeah, that's the stuff.
Like
that's the stuff that gets left over. That's on the sale rack. That's the stuff that, you know, those companies that put boxes together. You know, they send you a blind box of golf clothing every month or every quarter or something. That's the stuff that's in there all the time. Really bad material. Really bright, ugly color. Probably a crocodile belt in there every once in a while for OTV.
Oh man, I want to get something straight. So you dig the socks. You dig the socks on Tringale today.
Yeah. Yeah, love them. Love that.
That's okay. I'm not going to push too hard. I'm just going to say that if those are good, there are still many out there. Socks of indeterminate length, not quite crew, over the ankle bone, like go the kind of socks that go with a pair of Nike Air Monarchs. There are some problems out there. I'm not going to tell you which players there are because I hope to not have a fight with one of them. But suffice to say, I'll have extra socks if someone needs them. In the fit realm here, underrated, strong dresser, Bryson DeChambeau. Mm-hmm.
You were just dogging him the other week for his khaki shorts, which, by the way, Pat Perez was seen wearing some light colored shorts.
And you know what? He fixed it. They were not present.
Well, so we need to talk about the hat situation. I think we've touched on this in the past. Bryson is no longer wearing that Hogan hat, but it struck me when he pulled out his scorecard today that his logo is still kind of the outline of his head in the Hogan hat. If he's going to be going baseball hat all the time, is he going to? We got to rebrand Bryson. This is an issue.
I don't know. I didn't see that. Anyway, I'm just saying the brand he wears and the colors he got this week and what he put together, he did a great job. And he's fun to watch. And his clubs sound really weird when they hit the ball. Just an interesting.
Yeah, we're all big around. Bryson fans here. That's not. I was not criticizing. I'm saying, what are we going to do about the branding? I mean, that's his logo. Bryson's logo is the outline of his head in that Hogan hat. I'm just worried about his branding. I know that part of – so this is going to get back into the team stuff. I guess somebody like Bryson is another guy that I would think is getting kind of pissed off watching the Four Aces collect these big checks every week. But maybe Bryson is okay with it. Maybe Bryson, chess player that he is thinking down the line, he doesn't care about these $750,000 checks for winning the team competition. He's thinking about Bon Lahiri in India and the kind of sponsorships they're going to be picking up next year for the Crushers, right? He's thinking about telecom giants in India. He's not thinking about 750 grand. He's thinking about $750 million. You think that's part of it?
Could definitely be a part of it. To me, Duff, not really worried about the rebranding is just an opportunity to sell more merch, create more material. So I don't think he would do another hat logo. I think he'd have to come up with something different, and then maybe leaning into the Crushers GC element as well. Assuming they stay Crushers GC, I haven't heard any rumors about Crushers changing their name or logo like some other teams may heading into the next season. But I mean, Bon Lahiri, huge untapped market there from a golf perspective. And if he comes up with something sick, maybe it will make piles of money for him and his team.
Speaking of big stars, Phil Mickelson, round of the day today, 66.
All black
six
outfit,
under 66.
By the way. So boring.
First top. Okay, well, maybe you don't like his clothes, but Phil is 50 years old, let's not forget. But he shot a 66 today and finally finished
like
in
it.
The top 10 of a LIV event. Is Phil back?
He said that. He said basically, paraphrasing, that it was good to see all of his work start to come to fruition last night after the press conferences were over and everyone had gone where they were going. I happened to be just walking back and he was on the member range by himself with his coach, hitting long irons one after the other, working on basically like looks like preventing a squeeze type heel shot. That seemed to be what what his miss was related to maybe being too quick in change of direction or whatever, best I could surmise. I wasn't close enough to overhear them. But yeah, good to see it pay off, and he's got things going the right direction. Nobody needs to win one of these more than he does.
In his career,
this would be the ultimate capstone, right? After getting short shrift for the greatest major championship victory ever at age 51, and also from nowhere last year, and then with all of the tumult this year, to not be able to savor any of that or go relive it or any of that stuff because of all this nonsense would be amazing if he could get back in form over the next three tournaments this year. That would be obviously optimal, but just next year in the normal course of business, if he has a great campaign and knocks off a victory, would be phenomenal.
Yeah, it seems that, you know, he hasn't been playing great golf in any facet of the game, but it seems to me, having watched all of these events, that the putting has been the biggest problem for him. And that's something that I suspect it'll come back, but you don't know when somebody's in his 50s that it's going to come back, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's where my head is at, is I think what we've been seeing, I mean, even prior to his time away from playing and whatnot, is basically it. He might get hot for a stretch and make a move, but I think for the most part, he's 52, a lot of miles on that chassis, and I don't know.
Could we see
that he's going to be a regular contender?
Could we see Phil Mickelson go into the arm lock? We're going to see Bryson maybe take Phil under his wing and teach him the arm lock?
It's basically arm lock right now. He's got that long shafted putter going up his arm as it is. I mean, it's really close. One of the things, even in the midst of this 66 today, I was present on the 17th hole where he plays a perfect tee shot, probably got 7 or 8 iron there to a right pin, which for a natural drawer of the ball would be a green lighter, hits it 15 feet right of the pin in 4-inch deep bluegrass. And then it's like just impossible to get close from there because he was above the hole. So those kinds of bogeys are the kinds of bogeys that you don't make when you're winning golf tournaments. So even in the midst of this great round, which we're super happy about, and I'm sure certain he is, he still has notes. He still has things to clean up.
Did you stick with him for the next hole? 18, obviously.
I did not. I was kind of posted up watching every group as they would come by.
Hit his tee shot way right and had to hit off the cart path for his second shot and hit a beauty. Made birdie on 18.
Very on brand.
Just so Phil. Sergio also, another guy who, Sergio's back, baby. Just like we said, after all the criticism he got last week, after all the crap he took from leaving the event at the DP World Tour, after the death of Her Majesty the Queen, Sergio having to suffer through the Texas defeat, comes back here. Second best round of the day, shot a 67 today. And
bogey free.
And finished in tie for fourth.
Yeah, super good. He had a little altercation with a guy on 14 after.
Speaking of on brand, what happened?
Were you on site?
No, but in a positive way. So it caught us off guard because after we're watching groups come through and it's 14, 15 area was a great place to catch a lot of action at once. And he has a sand wedge in his hand to a right pin. And I basically say, he's making birdie here. And our friend says, no, he's not. And he hits this little floater in there and it's going to be stiff and it hits the pin and bounces hard back in the bunker. And everybody kind of reacts to it. And he's obviously disappointed and gets over to play the bunker shot. I mean, nothing happens out of the ordinary. You just kind of put your hands on your knees and just think, man, but for 1 of 2 inches. And anyway, he's getting ready to play the shot and somebody makes some kind of joke and got him tickled somehow that as he was going up to the ball, he kind of had to stop and he kind of leaned on it, looked at the guy like, okay, like good one, but like I'm busy here. Like, probably, you don't
was
mind.
It, was it country club adjacent?
No, it was not.
Was it Chubba Watson?
This.
No. Was it drunk by the turn?
No.
You can't throw a stick at a LIV golf event without meeting Instagram golf comedians.
Or some of their most prominent fledgling podcasters. I tried to see as many folks as I could. But anyway, it was just an interesting and fun thing. And then he gets it up and down from however many yards short in a tough spot, makes a 20-footer for par and is like, yep.
I mean, I wonder how many flag sticks these guys expect to hit around, because that wasn't the only one he hit. Later in the round today, I saw him hit one where he basically got the approach shot. It wrapped up in the flag and dropped straight down. He had 2 feet for his birdie.
Man, I must have been on the other side of the golf course for that. Just that kind of stuff is wild. I'll hit a flag stick when I throw a putter at it. That's about it.
Yeah, I mean,
I was just never with a golf ball.
Reed chipped in twice today. Ho hum.
They were going through it. They were going through it during the team press conference. And he's like, "Yeah, it's good to get off to a good start. You know, I chipped in twice and blah blah blah." And Perez turns over and says, "What?" Yeah, you know, I mean, I chipped on 7, I eagled 9.
Yeah, blah, blah. Perez was like, Perez "I didn't chip like, to within 15 grief. Feet."
Really good.
We should settle up our bets. I think we might have mentioned, of course, Jay Score. You did have Cam Smith, so you're on the board. Your first victory.
We have made it.
Yeah. OTP, you picked Taylor Gooch, who played like poo. I had Matt Wolf. Remember, he was 35-1. I thought I was going to look like a mastermind.
Genius. Yeah,
he didn't play that well this weekend.
67 first round was
Yeah, it was great. So he ended up coming in 17th, I think. But then, J-Score, you're the winner. We also had an over-under bet, OTP, you and I, on David Puge. I said he would finish worse than 39.5. And David Puge was in 43rd, 44th, 45th all day long. He decided to birdie 2 of his last 3 holes. And he finished in, I think, a tie for 37th. So you win, OTP. $20 to you. Congratulations.
Incredible.
Now I'm just looking here, DD, and it looks like he is +5 and T42. So I want to make sure before I celebrate, I'm
controversy.
Looking at livegolf.com.
No,
livegolf.com leaderboard.
I've got him at plus 4.
What do you have?
And he's T39.
Okay, well, let's come right back in. 39th +4. That's right. Thank you, Refresh. We'll take it. Let's go.
Yeah, it's not 39th. It's tied for 37th. So the Live Golf score, I think what they do is they rank each one of these players because they're doing the points for the year. So they don't do ties with the points. They do a tie-breaking system with the points, and it has to do with like who got the best score on the back nine, stuff like that. So in points, he came in 39th. But in the bet that we had, which is real golf, he was tied 37. You win either way. Congratulations. Yeah. Venmo. Yeah. Tough.
You're a tough. You're a gentleman.
Week for me. I, you know, Triple G, Gennady Golovkin is one of my all-time favorite boxers. He had his third fight with Canelo Alvarez, who I'm not a big fan of. Last night, Triple G came out. He's in his 40s. The guy's 41 years old. He came out looking a little scared. He's never been knocked down in his entire career, and you get the feeling he wants to protect that record. So he came out and did absolutely nothing for the first 6 rounds. Kind of showed up in the last 4. The judging was, as usual, mystifying because it's boxing. But it was a clear victory for Canelo. Congratulations to all the Mexican boxing fans out there. It was a fair decision, finally, but upsetting to see my boxing hero, Triple G, not give us the big drama show that he always promises. So I had a few bucks on him. So tough weekend there.
I've had a terrible time seeing the future so far in football, having a hard time predicting which team is going to wind up with the most points or the right number of points at the end of the game. So I kind of share some of your pain.
All right, so there was some other golf this weekend. The PGA Tour also was playing in Napa Valley, California, the Fortinet Championship or Fortinet Open. These guys, so you know, we have our new segment, the ratings game, and I was planning on having the Fortinet final round ratings be the center of our show this week in the ratings game. They didn't put the tournament on TV live. This is their whole big thing about how important the PGA Tour, we've got the best tour in the world. They've got these media deals that they're getting a gazillion dollars for, and they didn't have the golf live on any of their networks this weekend. So I followed on the internet, and on Twitter I saw that Max Homa defended his title. He won this tournament, this fall series FedEx points grab last year, and he defended his title this year. He was in the final group. He chipped in on 18 for birdie, but Danny Willett, former Masters champion, had a 3.5-foot putt to win. He missed it. but put it 4 feet by, missed the comebacker. So Max Homa won, no playoff. Congratulations to Max in the Fortinet. Your winner again.
Oh, man. Congratulations to Max. My heart goes out to Danny Willett. I have both won and lost that way, but I've certainly lost that way more times
but
than
I think
I've won.
The bigger story than Max Homa and Danny Willett, who are well taken care of, for us, our new favorite PGA Tour player, Jimmy Walker, made the cut.
Yes. Jimmy, top 25 in his first tournament back on the Redemption Tour, singing the Redemption song, got into the French Laundry.
Yeah, top 25, and not only that, but he got off the wait list apparently at the French Laundry and had the nuts to go to the French Laundry, which is like a four-hour meal.
I love that.
The night before his final round on the PGA Tour, his first tournament back, he shot a 71. It wasn't his best round of the week, but, you know.
Yeah. I know it's late in the show here, but can I do something? I really feel like I made a mistake.
What's that?
Now, I've thought about it more, and I've reviewed the tapes, and I really feel like what I should have said is that I want to be Jimmy Walker. Like, now, once I thought about it more, it's like, no, that's exactly what I want to happen. I want someone to hand me a spot, and I want to.
Oh, you want to apologize for
have a telescope
the week? I mean, because it was clear to me for sure, and I assume it was clear to all of our listeners that you do want to be Jimmy Walker. I don't think anyone was confused about that. What we were confused about is why you had included him as loser of the week.
Well, what I've thought about it more, and just to clarify the position, what I think the true loser of the week is the ranking system that creates those kinds of vagaries where those things happen, right? Yeah. Where once someone leaves the tour, they cease to exist in the record book. And then exemptions are handed out on the other side. So poo-poo on you, PGA Tour. Let's go, Jimmy Walker.
Yeah, so interestingly, among those he was tied at 25 with, and there were a whole bunch of them, among those were Cameron Percy, who may become a hater and loser of the week in the future. Had some trouble with that guy on Twitter. And Hideki Matsuyama, who hopefully will become a live player in the next year or two, but also tied at 25. There was also golf being played in Europe this weekend. The DP World Tour was in Italy at Marco Simone, outside of Rome, site of next year's Ryder Cup. And you know how we feel about the Ryder Cup. Little Lord McIlroy was on hand. Rory spreading the PGA Tour gospel, collecting some Race to Dubai points, and probably a very hefty appearance fee check. Rory came in fourth. Tournament was won by the Scot Robert McIntyre, who beat Matt Fitzpatrick in the first playoff hole. He collected a winner's check of 510,000 euros, or about 510,000 US dollars, with the current exchange rate at almost 1-to-1. To make more than $500,000 at Live Chicago this week, you'd need to have placed in the top 11. Mickelson, DP World Tour member Lori Cantor, Bryson DeChambeau, and Chase Koepka all earned $576,000 this week, tying for eighth. So congrats to Robert McIntyre on the big win, and I guess to Rory McIlroy on his appearance fee. So the LPGA was in Portland at the amazing CRE Portland Classic. Andrea Lee shot a 66 to win by one stroke over Daniela Darkea. She's your winner at Portland. Maya Stark played really well, looked like she was going to make a run. She had the lead at one point, shot a 66 today, finished at 16 under eighth. So congratulations to Maya on making a good showing in her LPGA debut. All right. Anything else, guys? This is the third episode, and it feels like it's the third episode in 4 days. I mean, we're gonna settle into a twice a week pattern and try to get them 3-4 days apart.
It absolutely does feel that way. After I've had so much professional golf in the last 3 days. Thank goodness these tournaments aren't 72 holes.
So I mentioned this on Twitter, but I think the benefits of the shotgun start and the team competition really shone this week with Cam Smith winning so comfortably. On the PGA Tour, when a guy has a 3 or more stroke lead, those last few holes are just such a slog. It's like a real death march. Very few players left on the course, and NBC or CBS or the Golf Channel is just going a commercial after commercial between shots. But here, even though the individual competition wasn't in doubt late, the team competition very much was. And so the action, it's happening all over the course. Tringale started his round on hole 14. So in the final minutes of the broadcast, we had him playing the par 3 13th hole needing a birdie to get the High Flyers into third. And when he made that birdie putt of, I think it was 12 feet or so, you're getting a fist pump from a guy that just gave his team a lift. And that's good TV all the way to the end of the broadcast. So I thought it was cool to see that aspect of the format really start to pay entertainment dividends for the fans.
There's some room for improvement in certain areas, but we'll wait until in Bangkok. None of us will be there. We'll all get the opportunity to watch it on TV. We'll have our comments ready.
Excellent, for sure. We're taking notes.
Only other thing I've got is, so we've got President's Cup coming up. Louis Oosthuizen made some comments this week while he was there in Chicago. I don't know if you heard any of them, JT. He's disappointed that he's not going to be on that team. He's not going to be able to play for Trevor Immelman. He understood, or he believed, that he was resigning from the PGA Tour and that he didn't break any rules. And so as a member of the Sunshine Tour, he should have been eligible to participate in the President's Cup. And it sounds like he's got a gripe to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's fair. And since, as we all know, as we've been whispered to a couple of times,
nobody cares about the President's Cup.
Thank you very much. We shall haunt your dreams. I don't think it matters that much for the tour to take a stand. Like, you have to qualify every single way possible. If he resigned his PGA Tour membership, he still belongs on this other associated tour, and he has the world ranking, and he has the cachet, and they need the players. They need a good player because they're going to get whooped.
It's the weird – this event is just silly, right? There's no – none of these people – they're not from the same country. It's the – what's the – there's no cultural adhesion. There's no reason why they should feel a bond with one another. This is really just like a – it's like an all-star game. It's like the PGA Tour all-star game, but they're excluding a big section of their membership. They're just splitting people up, and there's no Western Conference and Eastern Conference. It's like, all right, we're going to take these guys and we're going to take everybody else, and you can play, but you guys can't play because you play in this other thing that's been around longer. It's just stupid. It's stupid. Nobody watches. I'm over it, but I feel bad for Usti.
I agree with you. I think the only way this tournament makes sense, the only way this exhibition makes sense, the only way whatever you want to call it makes sense, is if it's co-ed.
That would be fun.
And there's more of an emphasis on showcasing world talent. There's such a concentration of women's talent outside the United States. It's a complete no-brainer, and everyone says it, everyone knows it, and yet it still doesn't get done. The whole thing just feels like
more of the same stuff all the time, and not really money grab and wash and repeat of the same stuff over and over again.
Yeah, I guess we should defer these takes until the next episode, where we'll be forced to talk about them because some of our listeners apparently are interested. So we'll hold off until we're going to do this Wednesday or Thursday. I got nothing else. Thanks, JT, for taking that trip to Chicago, being on the ground, giving us the deets.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
Your experience. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to Liv Combs for helping us out.
And we'll try to find some TV ratings. I mean, we got to play the ratings game.
I love that game. I'm looking forward to that game. It'll be a lot of fun.
It's a huge hit.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Go Pooge.
Bye.